The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org. I'm your host, James Mingy. One of the Downtown Eastside's premier artistic events, the Heart of the City Festival, begins next Wednesday, October 27th, and runs until November the 7th. The festival will feature more than 100 events and over 1,000 participants throughout the Downtown Eastside and East Vancouver. Recently, I spoke with Terry Hunter, co-founder and artistic director of the festival. Hello, Terry Hunter, and welcome to Co-op Radio.
Thank you, James. It's great to be here.
Or back again to Co-op Radio, I suppose I should say.
Yes.
Anyway, well, just in case there are people out there who may not be familiar with either you or the Heart of the City Festival, can you just start with just a quick introduction, who you are and what the festival is and your relationship to it?
Yeah. My name is Terry Hunter. I'm also now carrying the name Nungulga, which is Haida for the Industrious One. I was adopted into the Sklinglanis clan of the Haida Nation last July, as was Savannah. And I'm the artistic director of, the executive director of Vancouver Moving Theater and the artistic producer of the Downtown Eastside Heart of the City Festival, which is a project of Vancouver Moving Theater. I'm a resident of the Downtown Eastside. I've lived here with Savannah since 1975. So what's that, 45 years now? And this is our home. This is where we raised our family. This is where we established our work. And it's a community that's very dear to us. The Heart of the City Festival was established in 2004. So we're now on our 18th annual, and the festival arose out of a very big and significant project that happened in 2003, which was the Downtown Eastside Community Play, which was a play that involved 80 residents from the Downtown Eastside, most of whom had never performed before in their life, in which we told the stories and the experiences of our community. And it was a huge success. We did it at the Japanese Hall, ran it for 2 weeks, standing ovations every night, sold out every night, had a huge impact. And then the question became after that, what can we do to sustain this incredible experience and the experience that people had from doing the community play? And the answer was to produce an annual festival. So that's the roots of the festival. The mandate itself is to promote the cultures, the stories, the great people, the art practices of our community, and to create a kind of an open house amongst each other in the community where we can share with each other our stories and our lived experience through arts and culture, but also share that with the larger community. And by the larger, I mean, greater Vancouver and beyond. As you know, there's a lot of stigma about the Downtown Eastside and a lot of misconceptions. So that's another key purpose of the festival, is to break down those stereotypes and to see, for us to present the community as a very multi-layered community that's very rich in culture, heritage, and people. And that's not about wiping out, the difficulties that we have here in our community. It is also about illuminating those difficulties, but placing in a larger context of a community that knows how to stand up for itself and has great stories to share with each other and the larger community. So that, in a kind of a nutshell, is the roots of the festival and what it is essentially about, which is about the Downtown Eastside promoting who we are and sharing who we are bringing hope, bringing inspiration, and bringing creative solutions and actions to the things that we need to be addressed.
So the participants in the festival, are they all from the downtown east side, or are just expected to bring what they bring to the festival as something related to the downtown east side? I'm just wondering, you know, how strict are the parameters, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, so we use the word downtown east side involved. So by that we mean residents who live in the community. People who used to live in the community but now are outside of it, people who have a history, a historical connection to the community. So, you know, maybe their parents lived here, or maybe they lived here for a while, or maybe they work here. It also involves the cultural groups of the community. So, you know, there's some key founding cultural groups within our community, indigenous people, the people of Chinese, Japanese, European, African ancestry. So, and those people, you know, continue to live in our community. And so we will work with artists who are not living here, but whose work has a historical connection to this community. So, for example, we might bring in a Silk Road who don't live in the community, but they are performing and presenting music that has a cultural connection to our community and an interest to our community. So we're open. And it's not a strict definition at all. It's that idea of downtown east side involved includes a lot of people.
I know from the website I see this year's theme is Stories We Need to Tell. Mm-hmm. What does that refer to, and how does that theme relate to the people participating in this year's festival?
Yeah, the theme is actually Stories We Need to Hear.
That's right. Sorry, I don't have my glasses on, so
okay. Yeah, it's just an important difference.
Yeah, big difference.
That theme arose last year during COVID, and we were in conversation with Gennarji O'Sullivan, who you'll know as a regular broadcaster on Co-op Radio. And she's also on the cover of this year's program guide, which we're very, very thrilled about. And we were talking with Gennarji about our situation in the community and, you know, the difficulties that we were facing. And she happened to mention in the conversation in passing, you know, these are stories that we need to hear. And we had been thinking about what our theme would be for next year. And when she said that, I kind of looked at Teresa and we looked back at Gennarji and we said, that's it. That's the theme of the festival. There's the stories that we need to hear. This community has stories that it needs to tell about its experience. And individuals within the community have stories that they need to tell and we need to hear. And I think the hearing component is important because it's through hearing people's stories that we develop a greater understanding of other people. We develop an empathy for their experience, and we learn, and we can see the world with fresh eyes and move forward together because we have a better understanding of you know, a particular situation or a particular lived experience. So, and there's also, you know, many, many stories and lived experiences that have been marginalized or not listened to or been disregarded. And and this is a community that's very much experienced that experience of being marginalized and not being listened to. And so it's also about hearing voices, hearing stories that we typically don't hear, and putting them center stage so that we can hear those stories. So that's where it came from. Yeah, it rose out of the community, and that's a very much that rising out of the community is very much a hallmark of this festival. We're not a festival that takes, submit your proposal by September 1st and we will consider it. And, it's a different model completely, where we are in the community, listening to community and having conversations with people, and people come to us with ideas and we say to people, hey, that's a great idea. What can we do to support that? And that support can range simply from, including you in the festival and helping to promote the show, to providing technical support, to providing funding to help develop the production or the idea. So the support that we provide is really based on what people's needs are. And so it's much more of a grassroots community development methodology, to use the jargon. The ideas arise out of the community, and that also very much the fact that Savannah, I live in the community, and Teresa, the associate producer, also lives in the community. So we're residents of the community. So we're here all the time listening to people and talking with people and developing ideas. And those ideas can also be developed over 2 or 3 years. Right now, we're producing the festival in 2 weeks, and I'm working on the grant application for the festival for next year. So there's a whole body of ideas and conversations that we've had with people it's an ongoing, all the year round kind of thing. And so the ideas are coming and being worked with community all year round.
Tell us a little bit about the types of presentations that are on at this year's festival. I'm wondering, are they all storytellers, or will there be music and dance, visual arts? Give us a little overview of who's coming to the festival this year.
Yeah, so, back to the mandate, our mandate is to cover all the art forms, from spoken word to theater to dance to music to multimedia, to represent all the cultures of our neighborhood, not to represent, but to support all the cultures of our neighborhood and all the neighborhoods of our neighborhood. So the Downtown East Side district, the Downtown East Side as we define it is defined by the city's definition of the district of the Downtown East Side. So it's Main and Hastings and the Hastings corridor, but it's also Strathcona and Chinatown and into Gastown and Victory Square all the way up to Clark Drive. So, we also strive and make sure that we have programming happening in all those areas. So that's the mandate. And specifically this year, in terms of the theme, stories we need to hear, those stories are being told through all the art forms. They're being told through theater productions. They're being told through a giant visual projection that's happening on the street up onto the side of a building. That's a production called We Live Here, which is Radix Theater. And they've worked with 30 Downtown East Side artists and done quite an amazing project. They worked with the Portland Hotel Society. And what they did was they put a visual camera above a painting frame, and then they filmed the artist creating the painting over a two-hour period. And the theme was, We Live Here. That was the theme that they were given to the artists. The artists were inspired by. And those videos, those two-hour videos of each of the creative process, is sped up to about 2 minutes. And so it happens really, really fast. And then it's being projected onto the side of a building in Chinatown from a parking lot. So that's, you know, that's a way, that's an example of a pretty exciting example of, you know, grassroots, but also presenting in a public space in a very strong and visual way. The theater production that I was referring to is a production called Hashtag What Now, which is addressing violence against women, violence against the LGBTQ plus community. And that production is taking place at the Russian Hall. So it's called verbatim theater. So they've taped the lived experience of people that have faced this violence. And then the actors are bringing that to the stage. So it's bringing forth those very difficult but important stories that we need to hear from people who have faced violence. And what else we got? Chinatown, some walking tours in Chinatown. Chinatown, as you know, is going through some really difficult times, and it's going through a whole grassroots community-led revitalization process right now. And so we're very happy to have two really exceptional walks. One is with John Atkin, and he's taking people on a walks of the laneways in Chinatown, which are really, really significant importance to the community. And there was a lot of shops and businesses in the laneways, and they're very little recognized and appreciated history there, but it's really, really fascinating. And there's a ton of murals and graffiti in the laneways. And also Jun Chao and Doris Chao of Youth Collaborative for Chinatown, two really strong, powerful women that are doing a lot of amazing work in our community. They're going to do a walk through Chinatown talking about the how they walk on the shoulders of the ancestors and where those stories are in the streets of the community. And so that's a very different kind of a thing than the visual presentation and the walk and the theater production. Another one I really wanted to highlight is Sid Chow Tan, who's a longtime social activist and documentarian, worked a lot with Shaw TV, community television. He has an incredible library of videos that he's collected over his that he produced over his 50 years. And so he is doing a special presentation on videos documentation that he put together, that he did around Chinatown and the redress movement for the head tax and other social justice issues that are important to Canadians of Chinese descent and important to all Canadians. So this is another story that we wanted to share with the community. And then, you know, and then I'll end with another one that's very different. You know, the Carnegie Community Center, which is, you know, such a vital home and living room to people in the downtown east side. And it's a place that people can go to get community and participate in the arts and get good meals and be connected to other people and the community. And they have an amazing arts and cultural program there. And they also have an amazing volunteer program there. And one of the folks that was there for years and years and years, a woman by the name of Joyce Morgan, who is a longstanding volunteer at the Carnegie and also a very accomplished piano player and very involved in the music programs at the Carnegie. And so we've put together a tribute for Joyce called Downtown Eastside Front and Center in Memory of Joyce Morgan. And about 15 musicians from the Carnegie, including Joyce's daughter, Heidi, and including the Carnegie Jazz Band, of which I'm a member, came together and we pre-recorded a show at the Fire Hall Art Center back in August. And so it's a tribute to Joyce, and so that we can share the story of her life with each other and with the larger communities. So that's an example of, I think, a pretty good example of very different kinds of things that are ways that we're sharing the stories of this community with each other and the larger community.
I don't know how much you like to talk about yourself, but I really can't let you go without a quick mention about you and Savannah. You're participating in this 50 years of creative collaboration. Just quickly tell us about what that show is going to be.
Oh, boy. I'm in the thick of that right now. We made the decision to go back into our photo archives and put together to gather different photos. And so we're putting together an exhibit at the Carnegie on the third floor, an exhibit of 50 years of photos from Savannah. You know, I had mentioned that, you know, we lived here in the community since 1975. And Savannah I met in 1971 at Simon Fraser University. So, and we've been together for 50 years. And so 46 of that 50 years, we've been here in this community. And so, yeah, it's been quite a trip, so to speak, down memory lane, pulling together all these photographs. And as I mentioned, there's going to be an exhibit on the third floor of the Carnegie. And then we're also doing an online event where we're gathering with old friends and the public that's interested to go through, you know, our journey to talk, to show photos and share stories and memories of those times that, you know, the different places. It's been an incredible journey with so many amazing lived experiences and things that we've done and the kind of work that we've produced over the years. And we really want to also, we're also using the opportunity to pay tribute and thank, you know, all the artists and the people that we've worked with over the years. And we were highlighting some of those individuals that had major impact in our lives and, you know, changed our direction or were really significant in helping us develop the work that we're doing. So everybody from Karen Jameson to Joseph Pepe Danza to Teresa Vandertuin, John Endo Greenaway, Michael Clegg, and Rika from the, well, I don't know, Rika hasn't confirmed yet, but Michael Clegg has the former director of the Carnegie Community Center, who had such a huge impact and was key in the founding of the festival. So those folks, you know, folks like that are joining us, and we'll have that opportunity to thank them and acknowledge them and to share some memories with them. So yeah, it's cool. I mean, there's I'm laughing because, you know, I'm up at 5:30 in the morning kind of finding those photographs and scanning them and trying to get them ready. And it's a major undertaking. We're going to be showing about 130 photographs in the exhibit and sharing a lot of those online. So yeah, it's been an amazing journey, and this community of the Downtown East Side has made it possible. We are very grateful and love this community very much, and we're very grateful for accepting us, for giving us a home, and for providing us with the opportunities that we've had. And it's, you know, we're just so grateful to the Downtown East Side community and all the individuals that we have the blessing and the opportunity to be able to work with. It's been a wild, crazy, wonderful ride, and it ain't over yet. There's a lot more to do.
Last year's festival, I know, had to move almost exclusively online because of, well, rather obvious reasons, I guess. Here we are a year later. The pandemic still hasn't run its course. I've given up trying to guess when it's finally going to end. This year's festival, is it still going to be exclusively online, or are things opening up now to allow live audiences? I know you mentioned the walking tour of Chinatown. Well, obviously, people have to be there for that. But how has it changed this year from last year?
Yeah. So last year it was mostly online. We did have events, a lot of events in the streets and plazas last year. But definitely most of the events last year were online. This year, it has opened up. We still have a very strong online component. I don't have the exact number in my head, but it's somewhere around 40 events that are online. The number of festival events is somewhere in the neighborhood of 110, 120. So I would say about a third of the events this year, or maybe two-fifths, are online. And they are both scheduled events and that are online, and also on-demand events that are online that you can watch at any time. And I should also mention that if people can't see an event at a scheduled time, that those events are being recorded and then will be archived on the festival website so that people can then watch them at any time at their own leisure. This year, we do have quite a more number of events that are happening in community, in the streets, in the theaters, and you mentioned two of them. The walks, for example, hashtag what now is taking place at the Russian Hall. We do have events at the Carnegie Theater this year. We are able to allow a very small audience into the spaces. So we just did a calculation on one of the shows that we were working on. We were planning yesterday, we had a meeting about it, and we can get about 15 or 16 people, 20 people in a room, depending on how many artists. So, you know, there is room now for audiences to come in. And we have our very active street program, Arts in the Street, we call it. So there's music in the streets, and there will be music playing from the outdoor patio on the Carnegie. We're going to have quite a number of events taking place on that patio, music events that will then be broadcast out onto the street. People can hear it from the street corner. And we also have a viewing room at the Carnegie too, at very specific times, in which residents who don't have access to computers can come into the Carnegie and watch events on the big screen. Those are both scheduled events, but also on-demand events that we have available that we can just play for folks. So, yeah, I was really hoping last spring when the vaccination was coming that we would be back to being pretty much out in the community. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened. And as you say, you know, I've given up on figuring out when this is going to get passed. You know, for all I know, we'll be still in the same position next year. Hopefully not. I'm so want to get back to just being primarily in community. Producing a festival of this nature online is really challenging. It's so much more complicated and so much more demanding. And it's doesn't have the accessibility for residents in the community. So I'm really looking forward to the day that we can really be back in community full time. We will always have, now that we've done this, some online component. It's definitely a model that works because you can reach audiences that you typically don't reach. And when you're video recording things, then you're archiving people's work. And so there's a huge value in that. Like the Joyce Morgan show, for example, you know, we've taped all these musicians with broadcast quality video, and that's now archived. That's history. And that's really, really important record that we have now for our community and for the artists themselves, that they have that footage themselves. So we'll continue to do that. But I'm really hoping that, you know, I'm just throwing out a percentage now. I would think that maybe at some point it would be maybe 10 or 15% of the festival, and the most of the events would be in the community. So, yeah, so there you go. That's the kind of things that we're grappling with and constantly adjusting to. The primary thing here is, of course, is just to make sure that we continue to provide platforms for the community to share their work. And so we'll do whatever we need to do to make that happen, to realize that.
And you mentioned the archive footage that'll be on afterwards. I presume then that means that those recordings will be available always, not just for a limited time after the festival ends.
Well, the videos that are archived, like if somebody does a show and we present it online.
Yeah, I'm just, some festivals will only have videos available, like, you know, for a month after the festival ends.
Yeah,
I presume for the Heart of the City, they'll be there always. Is that right?
No, they will be up during the duration of the festival, certainly on the website. As to, you know, putting them in a vault and locking the key, I don't think that'll happen if you know, we've got permission from people to show it right now for the, no, actually, no, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. We adjusted it. We have permission from the people who record the work to hold it on the website for 1 year up to the day before the next festival begins. That's the new policy. Yeah.
And where is that website? What is that website address?
It's heartofthecityfestival.com. Yep, just Google Downtown Eastside Heart of the City Festival and bingo, you're there.
What sort of costs are involved with the festival? Is it mostly free events or are there ticketed events?
They're mostly free. I would say 98% of them are free. Some of them are ticketed. Hashtag What Now is ticketed, but we do have community tickets that are available, vouchers, and they're going to be at the Carnegie Community Center in a couple of days. So there's some tickets there. There is a cost to the, I think it's by no donation, actually. I should know this information off the top of my head. There's the tickets for openings, a production we're doing at the Far Hall, but they're very affordable. They're only about $10 each, I think. But most of the events are free, and we are asking for donations. So if people go to the website and register to see a show, there is a donation button there, but it's not required. But we do appreciate all the people that make donations and support the work of the community.
In case people actually want to get themselves a copy, a real hard copy they can hold in their hands of the festival program, where can people find those?
Certainly at the Carnegie Community Center, if you're in the neighborhood, that's the best place. They have been scattered around the neighborhood and up and down Main Street and Main and the Drive. I was just talking to Lally, our operations manager, yesterday, and she said, it's been really different this year because the community centers are taking less numbers. They won't take 100, they'll take 10. The shops are taking, aren't either not taking them or they're taking fewer. So, you know, when we put them in, they can be gone quickly. So you just have to kind of poke around and keep your eye out for them. But certainly if you're around the Downtown East Side, the Carnegie Community Center is the place to go. The program guide is also available online as a flipping book. If you go to the website, click on the link to the program guide flipping book, and you can see the program guide there. And if people really want a hard copy and they can't access one, they can also always email me. Terry Hunter at my email address, which is vancouvermovingtheater@shaw.ca. Vancouver Moving Theater is all one word, all lowercase, and be sure to spell theater with the R-E on the end. And email me with your mailing address and we will mail you a program guide.
That sounds fabulous. But of course, everything, regardless of what you're looking for, you can find it all on the website, heartofthecityfestival.com, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's all there. Yeah. We do encourage people to register for events, even though they're free. And that way you get notices, reminders that the event is coming up. Thank you so much. It's been...
I do have one last question. I do have one last question.
Please, sorry.
Well, you mentioned right at the top of the interview that you're already at work on grant applications for next year's festival, and you and Savannah are doing your show on 50 years of collaboration. I have to wonder, what's the future of the Heart of the City Festival looking like in your eyes? Do you see it continuing on? Are you and Savannah going to still be running it, or are you sort of starting to think about maybe getting new people in to take over? What's next for the festival?
That's been a big question for Savannah and I. I'm now 70 and Savannah is 75. And succession has been very much on our minds for 5-6 years now. Making that transition has been really slowed down by COVID. It's been really a challenge just managing that, you know, working, getting the festival going without, and trying to think, work on succession at the same time. Our Savannah and I see ourselves as stewards of the Heart of the City Festival. We were given the responsibility to produce the festival on behalf of the festival, on behalf of the community. And so we see ourselves as stewards of the festival on behalf of the community. So succession is really important to us, and ensuring that the festival continues beyond us is vital. And because the festival isn't ours, it's the community's. And so succession is something that we're very much thinking about. And hopefully, you know, in the next 5 years, there will be new leadership running the festival. And we're constantly looking to be bringing in new people and new leadership that can take over the work as we move forward. So that's very important to us and very much on our minds. But the festival will be here in 10 years and in 20 years. That's our goal, is that we find replacement. We are able to bring in people that will commit to moving the festival forward for another 2 decades, at least. Somebody that will make that kind of commitment to, you know, keeping the festival going on behalf of our community.
Well, that does sound like great news. And thank you again, Terry, for taking some time to talk with us yet again here on Co-op Radio.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, James. As always, I really enjoy a chat and with you, and you have some great questions, and wish you and Co-op Radio all the best.
That was Terry Hunter, co-founder and artistic director of the Heart of the City Festival. Festival programs can be found at the Carnegie Center and various locations in East Vancouver, or you can go to heartofthecityfestival.com. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.